question I ask all the time is who's in charge? And I'm thinking about it again because I have some plants who got aphids. And so I put the aphids outside. I mean, I put the plants outside. That was pretty cool. Within 5 minutes, some wasps showed up, but they were mainly there to eat the honeydew and not the aphids. And the plants have been outside for 4 or 5 days now, and there are not so many of the larger wasps because a lot of the honeydew has been eaten off. Honeydew is a sweet exudate of the aphids. Anyway, now I was just out there a few minutes ago, and there are just hundreds of tiny little wasps. About the big ones are maybe that long, and the little ones are about that long. And I know what they are from just loving insects, that they're parasitic wasps, and they're not social wasps. They live completely solo lives, and the way they work is they lay an egg inside. They use their stinger not to cause specific pain, but to lay an egg inside of an aphid, and then that baby will, they won't kill the aphid because they want the meat to stay fresh, and the baby wasp will eat the aphid from the inside, and then at some point will emerge like that scene in Alien from the body of the aphid. It's both horrifying and also just nature is amazing, especially when it's not happening to you. And there are, the vast majority of species of wasps actually are parasitic wasps, and they have different host species or different prey species. Some of them will go after spiders. Some of them will go after cockroaches. Some of them go after caterpillars. And in some cases, they not only lay an egg, but they also control the actions of the prey. So there's at least one species of wasp who will inject a certain species of spider, and then the egg, when it hatches, it controls the spider's behavior such that the spider now, instead of spinning a normal web, spins a special cocoon inside of which the wasp will eat the spider and be protected from the outside world by the cocoon, and then eventually emerge as a wasp from this. Or there are species who go after cockroaches, and it's very interesting because the cockroaches have been seen to, they know what's coming, and they defend themselves. They, about 50% of the time, they're able to get the wasp away by kicking them in the head. And interestingly enough, older cockroaches are better at it than younger cockroaches. So in many species, you know, it's sort of learned behavior. And of course, nature can be really unforgiving in this way, that if you don't learn, if you make the mistake once, you're dead. In any case, the spiders or the wasps will lay an egg inside the spiders, inside the cockroach, and take over the cockroach's brain and get the cockroach to walk into a burrow where they seal it up, and then the baby wasp eats the cockroach. And there's a lot of actions like this in nature with parasites. Rabies is a parasite who, to move from one host to another, will move in saliva. And so what the rabies does is cause swallowing to become extremely painful, and therefore you end up with a lot of saliva in the mouth. And then also it can make the creature what's called, I mean, there's two types of rabies. It's called dumb rabies, I believe, where you just go numb. You go into a coma and die. And the other is called furious rabies, where basically you become furious. And we think of Old Yeller snapping at people. And the reason that it's snapping at other beings and it sticks and at everything else is because that allows the rabies to be put into another host. You know, you've got saliva in the mouth, you bite somebody, it's found a new place to live. And I want to give a couple more examples because it's just so extraordinary out in nature. And this happens all the time that there's something called a horsehair worm who lives inside of grasshoppers or crickets and will get into the grasshopper or cricket. I don't remember how, but the point is at one stage of the parasite's life, it has to be in water. And I think that's where it lays its eggs. I'm not sure how it gets from the water into the next cricket, but that doesn't matter right now. So it lives and it eats out the cricket or grasshopper from the inside. And then as it's about to get ready to emerge, it can't emerge on land or it'll die. So it causes the grasshopper or cricket to jump into a body of water. A couple more examples. There's a certain type of parasite who one of its stages is in a snail, and it will cause a snail to go to the top of a rock and start waving itself around. So why? To attract the attention of a bird who will eat it, and that'll be the next phase. One more example, I'll stop with all this. I just, as you can tell, I'm really fascinated by all this. There's a parasite who one part of its life is in a bird, and then the bird poops, a seabird, and then that poop is taken up by some creature at the bottom. I don't remember what type of creature. And then the third part is it is taken up by a fish. And the way it will affect the fish's behavior is it causes the fish to swim to the surface and flash its belly. And it does that so that the bird will more likely eat it. And those parasites are so important that without them, they drive the entire estuary community in that if they're not there, the birds starve because it's too hard to catch fish. So they're actually driving the entire carbon cycle, the entire nutrient cycle. And what I want to get at with all this, oh, I want to do one more, sorry. The lancet liver fluke, at one stage, it's in the liver of sheep or cows, and then they poop it out, and snails eat the poop, and they take up the liver flukes, and then it burrows out through the skin, and is released into the snail slime, and then the snail slime is eaten by ants, but now the ant has to get eaten by a cow to finish it up, so what it does is it takes over the ant's brain, causes the ant, during the day, the ant works in the hive like normal or works in the nest like normal. And then in the evening, it crawls up to the very top of a blade of grass, clamps on tight and holds there in the hope from the parasite's perspective that a cow or sheep will come along and eat the blade of grass and with it the ant and with it the liver fluke. And the question I always ask in all of this is who's in charge? As Old Yeller is snapping furiously at the previous owners, at the humans, is Old Yeller thinking, you know, I've always hated these people. They treated me poorly, and now I'm finally going to get back at them? Or is Old Yeller fighting it with every bit of strength going, no violence, no violence, Gandhi, Gandhi? Or is Old Yeller, what is Old Yeller thinking? What are the ants thinking as they climb up to the top? What are the various creatures thinking? What is the cockroach thinking as it walks into the burrow? And I think about this a lot in terms of Jack Forbes, Columbus and Other Cannibals, and the Wendigo disease. He talks in there about Jack Forbes believed that the problem is that there is a spiritual illness with a physical vector that's not a metaphor, it's a real thing, that causes people to become cannibals and consume the souls of others. And this makes as much sense of the destruction of the planet as anything else, that the dominant culture has been turned into a bunch of zombies who consume the planet in order to what? I don't know. And so I always think, you know, they talk we've heard about people getting gold fever, you know, the conquistadors, that they would kill anyone and do anything for gold. And we've talked about people getting oil fever. Talk about it less now, except even though it's more manifest, that they would do anything for that black gold. And this is a question I ask as this culture is killing the planet, is who's really in charge? And I'm not suggesting that we have some parasite burrowed into our brain, some physical parasite burrowed into our brain. I'm not suggesting we got stung by a wasp who now causes us to act the way we do. But I do believe we have something. The destruction of the planet is so nonsensical. You know, we can also go a completely different direction with this. And, you know, we've talked before about Lewis Mumford talking about authoritarian techniques and how the technologies themselves run society. And at this point, we make cities for cars. We don't make them for human beings. And we make an entire economic system. We fight wars and kill each other over oil. And we kill human beings so we can get access to oil, so that we can run the machines. We're killing the planet so we can maintain this economic system. I just always keep coming back to that question of who's in charge.